Yes, this is a Mark Haney show, and we are on a mission, still on a mission, to ignite the entrepreneurial revolution right here in the hometown we love. I'm doing a few throwback shows in around now because I'm working on some exciting stuff. So I'm bringing back some of the exciting guests that we've had from the past. Today we're going to be joined by Taro Arai. He is Mr. Makuni, and you've seen Makuni's grow over the last several years. But you're going to hear in today's show a little bit about the humble beginnings of Taro and his family and the Makuni story. And I think it's one of those stories that you're going to hear. There's actually a lot in common between me and Taro. Taro is the chief dreaming officer at Makuni's. I am the chief dreaming officer at Haney Biz. I want to become the most loved group of companies here in the Sacramento region. And you know what? That's what Makuni's has a vision of becoming as well. And so we are, we're brothers from another mother in some respects. But we both started off as Sacramento Union paperboys as one of our first jobs. So I think as you hear today, you're gonna hear a little bit. And we were both born in Japan. That's the other thing about me and Taro. So I think in today's show, you're gonna get some cool facts and maybe hear some similarities between the old man Mark Haney and Mr. Taro Arai, Mr. Makuni. And the second guest for today's show is another throwback, a guy with my same birthday. We are the same age, Mr. Scott Syfex. And we're gonna get a little bit of history on what where Scott Syfex came from, really an inspirational upbringing as well. Both Taro and Scott share that what I would call perseverance, and really a little bit about that that mentality that it's okay to be great, right? It's okay to be different. It's okay to put yourself out there in a way that really gets you noticed. And so I think in today's show, you're going to get a sense as to two people who have really got themselves noticed right here in the hometown we love. And at the end of the show, I'm going to share a little bit of my philosophy on winning and a little bit about why a lot of us don't really have the courage yet to put ourselves out there in a way that gets noticed. And I think it's sometimes we're embarrassed or afraid of looking weird or different. And, you know, maybe that's okay. Maybe being a little bit weird or different is okay. I'm going to share a little bit about my thoughts, and maybe that's the key to winning in business, and maybe that's the key to having success in a lot of areas in our lives. So stick around, my friends. It's the Mark Haney Show.
Welcome. Now, do you ever get to the end of the week and you're wondering, man, what happened this week? This week flew by. You know, there's 168 hours in a week, and somehow you get to the end of the week and, you know, where did it go? And then the weeks become months, the months become years, and at the end of the year, you're like, what did I get done this year? And I think probably as entrepreneurs, we're chasing so many different directions that time can easily slip away from us. But I can tell you from my own experience, from the School of Hard Knocks of Mark Haney, that the better we manage our time, the better we manage ourselves, the more effective we are in reaching our dreams. And the C student is getting a little busy. So I've started this radio show. I'm working on a number of startups. You've heard the story, the real estate startups and the existing companies that we have going in security, starting a limo company. But there's presidents and CEOs and business partners that are in charge of all those businesses. But on this radio show, I'm the guy, which there's nobody to delegate to when you are the guy on the radio. So I am becoming a little bit overwhelmed. Time is slipping away from me, and I'm finding that my time is, in a weird way, it's just so much more valuable now than maybe it's ever felt like. I'm getting asked to do things like go speak at Elk Grove Startup Weekend, and I spoke to some entrepreneurs there, and it was fun. Maylene Wong, connected me up with her group. I'm going to be speaking at the Sac Metro Chamber and on perspectives, and that happens in a couple of days. But I'm also meeting so many new people, so many cool people. And all of these meetings, all of these introductions, all of these opportunities to help entrepreneurs in our region are really gobbling up the time. So in today's show, I want to help address that issue that we all have in figuring out how to manage our time, right? Because there's 168 hours in a week. And whether you're managing hundreds of people or you're managing just yourself and a couple other people, the most effective leaders, the most effective entrepreneurs really start by managing themselves first. So coming up in the show, we have a couple of off-the-wall, very, very successful guests. And coming up a little bit later, we're going to meet Bonnie Blanco, the founder of BB Construction Management. But first, after the break, we're going to meet one of the most esteemed restaurateurs in our region. We're going to meet the founder of the 8 Makuni's Restaurants and the face behind the respected Makuni's brand. We're going to meet Kataro Arai. All right, and we are back with Taro Arai, Chief Dreaming Officer, Sushipreneur, Makuni Restaurant Group CEO. How you doing this morning, Taro?
Very good. Thank you very much.
Thank you for coming out on a Saturday morning. I know you work late in the restaurant business, and you're back at it this morning.
It's great.
Welcome.
Thank you so much.
Okay, so now, Taro, you and I have a lot of things in common that most people may not know. Yeah, we do. We were both born in Japan.
Oh, yeah.
We both went to Oakmont High School.
Okay.
We both share the same title in our businesses, Chief Dreaming Officer.
That's amazing.
And you strive at Makuni's to be the most loved restaurant in the world. Share with us your story. I mean, you had to overcome hardships that most of us, you know, we can't understand. The perseverance that you have had to demonstrate is really unbelievable. Moving here from Japan as a teenager. Can you share your story with us?
I mean, from where? Like,
sure, from when you get hit in the face back in Japan.
Well, I was so unique in Japan. I mean, I'm different, I would say. And I just couldn't follow every rules that they had. And then hair has to be a certain way. I just couldn't do it. So I did a reverse mohawk. I would think only one, maybe in Japan. But
with the reverse mohawk?
Yeah, just shave the middle.
And you're a teenager with a reverse mohawk in Japan, which is very, very conservative. Right? Is that right?
And then the shoes to our school, we had to wear certain shoes, white shoes with yellow line. And
oh, wow.
Yellow, but I found the red one for half off. My parents didn't have much money. So I love red. I said, why not get that one?
Yeah. You're a rebel.
Well, I wanted to be who I am, you know. So I went to school with those shoes. Among over 2,000 students, I was the only one. So I felt so special. And that morning, in front of all students, principal called me up to the podium, you know, stands. And I was so happy to be special. I was waving at my friends. And he said, turn around. So I did. And he just started smacking my face.
He started hitting you.
Till I bleed all over. And he said, hey, if you don't follow school rule, it's going to happen to you. So,
and you were the class president, right?
Yeah, I did everything. Yeah, and then
and you're bleeding all over the ground in front of the entire
right.
School.
So I wasn't that special. So I took the shoes. I was hard headed. So I gave the shoes to my principal, and I didn't wear shoes for a year, just to show.
You went barefooted to school?
Yeah, I was hurting too. But I just wanted to show. You know, I just couldn't do it. What they asked me to do every single thing. So then I went home and I told my dad about it. I just can't fit in Japan, and he's the one suggested me. America might be the best place for you to go.
Wow. And so you and your father had a discussion. Mm-hmm. You decide as a teenager that you're going to get shipped off to America.
Yeah.
And the family stayed back home.
Right. So when I was 11, newspaper was only work I could find. So I started doing that. And then till 15 and a half and raised $6,000. So I told my parents, I'm ready to go.
Okay. So you had the $6,000 to move yourself to
United States. That was my dream to go there.
And then how'd you end up in Sacramento?
So my dad, my mom, you know, my sister, brother, they all said they wanted to go with me. So I found a church in Sacramento who needed a Japanese-speaking pastor. And then my dad's job was a pastor all his life. So I said, that's perfect. So we, you know, he applied and got a job, and we got a green card right away, and we came straight to Sacramento.
And you ended up, that was when you were in high school. So you started off at Johnson High School.
Right.
And then you decided to relocate. What happened?
So what happened was we moved 10 times first year and a half looking for a cheaper rent.
Oh, okay.
Because my dad was getting $450 a month in pay from church. So we did a newspaper route, collecting cans, and we did everything we could do. Meanwhile, miracle happened that we met the Japanese guy, and we met him only a couple of times, and he exchanged the phone number with my dad, and he asked my dad what we were doing, and my dad said, I had a dream of opening a restaurant. And it was kind of crazy because we had only $2,000 in the bank account, but they keep calling each other, and he said, what's your bank account number? So my dad said, here's my number, because we have only $2,000 all together, so we didn't care. So we gave it to him, and next time we went to the bank, found out he sent us
$300,000. $300,000 to get
without any contract. I never seen that many zeros in my life. So we called him back, and you made a mistake. He said, no, you need that for opening a restaurant.
So you opened up your first restaurant. Tell us a story about how you opened up the first restaurant.
Well, I mean, my dad didn't have any business concept, business plan. He never cooked in his life. And he's telling me we're opening a restaurant. I couldn't believe it. So he said, do you believe in miracles now? I said, yes, I do.
Now that the $300,000 is in the bank.
Who's going to give that kind of money to a total stranger? And even finding a location, too, that's very important. He ran all his life, and he said, I just want to run by the dam. He opened the map. That's how he picked the Fair Oaks store.
Okay.
We had no idea where to open. So that's why I moved to Del Campo High School. That was close to a restaurant. And, of course, I didn't speak English. As you know, my nickname was Mr. No Problem in high school.
Now, how did you get that? Remind the audience of how you got that nickname.
The thing is, I didn't speak English, and somebody told me, if you don't understand, just say no problem. I said, okay, no problem.
So that became your nickname.
Yeah.
Mr. No Problem.
Which class are you going? I could only say, it's no problem. I got ditched on the homecoming dance? No problem. So they used to call me that. I took that in the business, too, and they said, well, you know, this hood is $50,000. No problem. This lighting system is $15,000. No problem. So we run out of money right away. So that's how we start the business.
And you started the business with Japanese cuisine.
Uh-huh.
And then how did the business progress from there?
Well, I mean, we lost all the money right away. Learned the word COD, not CDO, Chief Dreaming Officer. It was cash on delivery.
Cash on delivery.
And we're behind 120 days on all vendors. So they start cutting us off, and all the bank. We're writing bad checks more than what we had in a bank. So they cut us off, and we just had nobody to work with.
And how did you overcome that? Okay, so you're having hard times. You've overspent on fixtures. You're on COD. What did you do to overcome that?
I mean, we're the only sushi bar in the whole world couldn't buy any fish for a while. It was frustrating because I didn't know how to make sushi to start with. I have to go buy a book, Sushi for Dummies, and now we don't have any fish to serve. And more we work, more we lose money. So I told my dad, let's go back to Japan middle of the night. I begged him over and over. We made a mistake coming here. But he's just like man of faith, and he'll never give up. And he told me, but he was crying every night praying to God. But he never told me that before.
So he prayed, and what happened? You guys must have changed something that you were doing to cause... You have 8 restaurants now. You're probably the most loved restaurant chain in the Sacramento area, and I know you have an office in North Star mm-hmm. and beyond. Everybody loves Mikuni's. How did you go from being flat on your back to where you are today?
I don't know. I mean, there's so many factors, I guess, has to happen. But, you know, when the hardest time, when I was almost 21, I was ready to... get out of here. My dad told me 2 things. It's not about what you know, but who you know. And we didn't have no confidence because we didn't know anything about business. But I started to talk to every customer came in. And getting to know right people was a big help. Anything I did, even fish company, I used to go to San Francisco to pick up 5 pounds of tuna, spend, I don't know, hours from 1:30 in the morning I leave because that old car I have to, you know, water and cool off the engine, and took like 3, 4, 5 hours sometimes to get back to it. I met one of the customers who owned the fish company in Sacramento. He goes to San Francisco to get fish anyway, and he gave me for half price and delivered to our door. I learned lesson right away. So I said, you know what? I'm going to meet every customer comes in. So I used to talk to everyone coming. I mean, we had only 30 customers a day, so that was easy. And second thing was, he said, you do your best and God do the rest. That was a turning point for me. I said, you know, I'm going to party. I'm going to work hardest as much as I can, and it doesn't work out, I'm going to blame upstairs. So since then, I have no stress, and I never had a bad day since.
Talking to customers, listening to what the customer says, diving in, having faith with the man upstairs.
Right.
Now, we're sharing a story about how you built a business, and something that I think we would all like to know is, how did you learn how to speak English? You came here and it had no English. I have a friend that came here, no English. He learned how to speak English. He was from Vietnam. He learned how to speak English by watching TV. How did you learn?
Well, I didn't have time to watch TV. So I'm always at the sushi bar. So they're the one educating me every day. So it was like English lessons, 24 hours.
Talking to the customers.
Oh, yeah.
Still and again.
I love it.
Now, as you built as you began building the business, your father had another dream that helped propel things. Tell us about that.
So the thing is, you know, we keep creating new roles because I'm Mr. No Problem. People say, I like hot dogs. Okay, no problem. I go to a liquor store, get a hot dog, and made a hot dog roll.
You can order a hot dog at Mikuni.
I'll never say no to anyone. So, I mean, like you, I mean, when you went to Oklahoma High School, did you eat sushi? No, right?
No.
I couldn't find anybody eat sushi, so I had to do something unique. So even people come in, I love beef. I said, no problem. I put the tuna in the beef oil, soak it, and did everything. And it cooked a little bit. They said, oh, it tastes like a beef, of course. I mean, I tried to do everything, but still not working. And one day my dad said, son, I had another dream. I said, Dad, is it hard enough to have a restaurant? Now you have another dream.
Come on, Dad.
Yeah. And then, you know, I married to my junior high school sweetheart, and we had 4 kids in 5 years. And when I had a second baby, the girl, he said, I'm going to name her Chio, mean 1,000 sheep. I said, that sounds pretty boring to me. He said, no, I had a dream of having 1,000 customers a day. I said, Dad, we're having 30. How can anyone dream of having that many people? We can't hold on those people. But as soon as he said that, next door yoga shop closed down, video store closed down, haircut closed down, donut shop moved out. So we just keep expanding. And just
knock out walls and expand the location.
It was crazy. Shouldn't happen, but just keep happening. So we start having 1,000 customers on weekends. And then the rest of it.
And well, yeah, but now you have 8 locations and they're all thriving. We went in there on the Thursday night the other night and it was swamped. Did your dad just keep dreaming or how did that grow? How did you guys grow?
So my dad said, keep moving forward. And then, I mean, he's kind of scary. He is man of God and whatever he said happens. So yeah, we just keep opening and we start having like, we use about 52 tons of seafood every month now.
52 tons?
Yeah, from nothing to 52 tons. And
how much rice do you guys use?
We have 2 guys cooking 10 at night to 6, 7 in the morning every day just for sushi rice. And also employee too, we started a family of 5. We're close to 700 employees now.
Wow.
It's just, I'm living an American dream. But my dad always said, be humble and give back to God and give back to the community.
And so, Taro, you are, Makuni's is very well known throughout our region, but you are the face of the business. It seems like you're everywhere. How do you do it? How do you manage your time? How do you manage to be everywhere and still grow these businesses?
Well, I mean, did you see my business card? I have many titles, and one of the titles is servant. So I want to be servant for my, you know, partners, employees, customers. That's my, you know, goal, dream, to be a servant for everyone.
But how do you divide up how much time you spend helping in the community? You're doing golf tournaments. You're doing things in the charitable area. You're running businesses. How do you divide up your time? I mean, entrepreneurs want to know, how do you do all that?
It took a while to get adjusted and everything. So everybody asked me, what's my strength? And then I have none. I'm pretty bad at numbers, administration, nothing. English, I have no knowledge. But only one thing I can say is maybe delegation. I find all the smarter guy around me. Yes. So, you know, I let them do all the details, headache, all the work.
Surround yourself with good people and delegate. A key to time management, ladies and gentlemen. You heard it here from Taro. Okay.
It was easy because I have nothing to be proud of and I'm pretty stupid. So it was easy for me to do. But some smart, you know, owners, maybe they might have a hard time delegating. But for me, it was much better to delegate.
That sounds very familiar. Now you do so many things. You guys have such a big heart. You help so many people outside of your business. I know you're doing things with people in Japan who are, you know, there's a suicide kind of epidemic in Japan. I know you do things for people with cancer. Tell me the story about the woman that came in who had been affected by the tragic disease of cancer.
So we just had a 20th annual golf tournament that we started 20 years ago, of course. And then we put the money on the Breast Cancer Navigator program. And we raised over $1 million through golf tournament. And, you know, we can't do it without all the sponsors and all the players and all my friends who I know. I want to thank them. But one day I was at the restaurant in Roosevelt store. One lady came in and started crying both out. I said, what did you do? Did you have a lot of wasabi? I mean, I didn't know how serious she was.
Yeah.
But she started crying. She started telling me the story. She had to go through breast cancer. She's very young, too. And then went through the Navigator program that we're supporting. Mm-hmm. I saw that and I said, wow, you know, it's amazing to help others, making a difference for others. And now I helped over 4,000 patients through the golf tournament too.
Wow.
So, and also, you know, when tsunami happened 4 years ago, we made a roll called Rescue Roll, $12 a roll. It was very personal to me. So we told the marketing team, let's sell 1,000 rolls in 2 weeks. And I was touched by people in Sacramento area. We sold over 4,000 rolls in 2 weeks. And then we had a party at Bayside, raised another $85,000. I mean, I just can't thank enough to people in Sacramento. It's unbelievable.
Wow. Well, I think firsthand that they feel the same about you, and the woman that came in who was personally touched is testament to that. We have time for a lightning round. You ever done a lightning round? This is how it works, Taro. So I'm going to ask you questions, and then you're going to give me a quick answer.
Okay.
You don't have a lot of time to think about this. You just give me a quick answer, and we'll
see. Can I translate first in Japanese?
Yeah. Clint, can you help? You know Japanese, Clint? Oh, okay. Wait, no, we can't. Sorry. Okay. Are you ready?
Yes.
Okay, lightning round with Taro Arai of Makuni's. Favorite non-Japanese food. Who makes it best?
Oh, wow. That's a good question. I have to say my wife. Uh-huh. She makes all prepare all different foods.
What kind of food?
Pasta, too.
What's the best?
Best. I love her fish egg pasta.
That sounds Japanese. Okay, I don't know if we're going to count that. We'll have to take that out to our judges. Okay. What do you miss most about Japan?
I love food and hot spring. I love hot springs.
Oh, hot springs.
Yeah, all guys are all naked in one tub, and natural hot springs just make you warm inside out. It's amazing.
Wow, that does sound interesting. favorite thing you love about your wife?
My wife? I don't know. She was the swimmer, 3 gold medals. She was all muscle. Every year she gets skinnier after baby, and she looks like a model now. I'm hoping she doesn't leave me now. But what's the favorite thing about her?
Yes.
I don't know. She's like, I always say she's like tofu. She's very simple. And you add it to any flavor, she compliments everything that we do.
Oh.
It's, you know, like cake, it's great looking, but after a few bites, you get sick of it. But she's like tofu. More years go by, the flavor goes in, and just simplicity and just, I finally start getting to know her now. So I'm excited for the next 25 years.
How long have you been married?
Only 22.
Oh, that's it? Oh, shoot.
More to go.
Okay. Person that has inspired you the most in the world?
As a human? I think my dad. He's a guy just gave me all the advices that I need since I was a kid, too. So I'm hoping to be a good son the rest of my life, too. I'm doing my best. I always ask my dad, how can I be better? How can I be a better son? And then the other day, he said, I need a dream. So I gave him another big dream called 50-50. 50 Mikuni locations by 50th anniversary of Mikuni. He said, oh, I love it. I'm going to pray about it.
Yeah, love it. 50-50. How many hours a week do you work?
Technically, I never work because it's so fun every moment. So I don't know, maybe zero.
I love it. Okay, so your nickname is No Problem. We know how you got that. And your favorite sports team?
Oh, I love sports. And I'm so happy that King stayed.
Sacramento Kings.
I love it.
That's great.
So I can't wait to...
Grant Napier, who's your favorite sports announcer?
I mean, I love Grant. We just went to Kentucky together.
All right.
On a private jet. We had a great time. So, yeah, he's a great guy.
He is good. Favorite dream vacation?
I don't know. I'm on dream vacation right now at the moment. I'm not kidding. Like, talk about Oakmont High School. They built a sushi club. They invited me. I went there, like 60 kids with Mikuni t-shirt. I cried. Wow. Because when I was in high school, nobody ate sushi with me. Now they had a sushi club. I don't know. I'm living my dream.
All right, and welcome back. And I want to introduce to you my new best friend, Scott Syphax. He's the founder and CEO of Nehemiah Corporation, among other things. Scott, how are you doing today?
Doing well, thank you. Glad to be here.
Good, welcome. Can you share with us what the Nehemiah Corporation is and all the different things that you do? It's a lot of stuff.
It is a lot of stuff. And the Nehemiah Corporation, or what we tend to call the Nehemiah Companies, is a not-for-profit social enterprise. And most people don't understand what that means. What that is that is a corporation that has a mixture of nonprofit and for-profit companies that are all organized around an overall societal mission. Ours is the creation of prosperity and the democratization of getting assets in the hands of people across the country so that they have a stake in the American dream. We do that primarily through home ownership, community lending, leadership development, and we work across the country. We're headquartered in Sacramento. And one thing I just want to share with you, I'm not the founder of Nehemiah. A guy named Don Harris is the founder of Nehemiah. I've been there like Methuselah, though, for almost 15 years. And during that time, we grew the largest down payment assistance program in the United States, where we put 325,000 families into home ownership across every state.
325,000 families.
Yes. We raised and gave away over $1.5 billion. It's a story that, because we don't advertise, most Sacramentans don't know, but yes, headquartered right here in Sacramento, at one point we represented about 40%, us and the folks who also did this work, of the Federal Housing Administration's home ownership single family mortgage volume in the United States. And in addition to that, we are real estate developers. We operate one of the largest infill real estate development projects in downtown Sacramento. You hear a lot about the rail yards and the arena and the Bridge District, which are all very fine, transformative projects that are really going to be a benefit to Sacramento. Ours, called Township 9, which is at the north end of downtown, up against the American River, is a 65-acre, 2,350-unit mixed-use development that's one day going to include about 20 acres of parks, those 2,350 units of housing, and about 800,000 square feet of office space, all with a new light rail line, which is the first leg to connect us up to the Sacramento Airport. So it's very exciting stuff. And then we also do community lending, where we lend money across the United States to all sorts of entities trying to improve neighborhoods and communities. And so some of the projects we're probably known for best in Sacramento is when a former basketball player came back to Sacramento and wanted to help improve the economic vitality of his own neighborhood, Oak Park. The city gave him some buildings down in Oak Park, and no bank would loan him any money. And so we took a chance on him because we thought he was a fine individual and had a great plan. His name was Kevin Johnson, and lo and behold, he became the mayor. Now we have a lot of folks participating in Oak Park, actually. One of the great leaders who's recently led the way in providing capital into that low-income community has been the sponsor of the show, James Beckwith and Five Star Bank, which has done a wonderful job in really sort of letting the other bankers in the region know that, you know, the water's warm, you can invest in lower-income communities, and you can do it well.
Five Star Bank, the Entrepreneur's Bank, they are a sponsor. Thank you for bringing them up, too.
And I mention that because of the fact that what Nehemiah really does is we take a chance on people and communities that many times aren't thought of as being, you know, sexy for investment yet, and we'll put our toe in the water first and be the first money in, and we'll say, come on in, the water's warm, and that rejuvenates communities and gives people hope. So that's kind of what we do.
That's what entrepreneurship's all about, and you've done a fantastic job of building, creating opportunity for people. I know that one of the things that is that you're passionate about is building entrepreneurs and a leadership program that you have put into place and are developing.
Well, my feeling is this, is that we have tremendous talent in Sacramento. And historically, we've always talked about how, you know, if we could just be more like San Francisco, if we could be more like Portland or Seattle or one like that, wouldn't that be great? And many times, this region, what would happen is if somebody came in with the same idea, someone came in from Sacramento, but they came in from San Francisco or the Silicon Valley, we'd pick that person over somebody that was locally grown because we didn't really believe in ourselves. And we decided at Nehemiah at one point, we do what's called venture, opportunistic social venture capital. And what we do is this. Nehemiah is ultimately owned by a nonprofit, but we make profit to reinvest that money into things that no one else will fund. And one of the things no one was funding was leadership. So we said, what's going on with those millennials and those people who really need a chance to, if they could just have the opportunities and get the right training and mentorship, they could make a difference because they're the people who are going to take over for us. So I went to my board and I asked them for $1 million in basically venture capital to see if we could prove a theory that if we cultivated the best and brightest young leaders in Sacramento, gave them great training, gave them great mentorship, and gave them opportunity, that they would be positioned to rise to the level of the C-suite, whether it's in business, politics, or whatever. But because I'm a capitalist and I believe so much in the free enterprise system, we wanted to make sure that regardless of what sector of society that they came from, they all understood the intersection between business and civic engagement. We wanted people to not only to be successful professionally, but we wanted them to give back. So we created what was called the Nehemiah Emerging Leaders Program. And 7 years later, yesterday we had our seventh selection day. We have about 75 fellows who range from business leaders who have gone toe-to-toe with Mark Cuban on Shark Tank, young man named Chris Johnson, who created
yes, what's I know
called
Chris.
The Rapid Ramen Bowl, to the chair of the Department of Insurance's Investment Board for Tax Credits, who is my successor at Nehemiah, a young man named Darrell Teeth, to many others. And the fantastic thing is that these leaders serve on over 150 boards and commissions throughout this region. They are actively involved in the growth and development of our region, and we've connected them in.
We're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we're going to talk to Scott a little bit more about his philosophy of giving back and why all entrepreneurs should be thinking about how they can reinvest into this community that that we all share in. We're here with Scott Syfex, CEO of Nehemiah Corporation. And Scott, you have a leadership program, and you're developing these leaders to think, to have the right philosophies about giving back in addition to just building businesses or building their organizations. And you made a strong statement to me recently about certain type of entrepreneurs, certain type of leaders, when they don't give back, that's un-American.
I stand by the statement. Yeah, I do believe it's un-American. What happened was that I am a very proud graduate of the first class of an amazing organization called the Sacramento Entrepreneurship Academy that was started by local real estate developer Jim Corbett back in about 1984, 1985. And Jim's concept was that if you took high-potential young people who wanted to be entrepreneurs, gave them a great training and great mentorship, you could cut some of the years of hard knocks off their career and really put them in position to be successful and keep them here in the region. And I was a beneficiary of that program. That was Jim giving back and creating that. And he inspired me to create the Nehemiah Emerging Leaders Program many years
later.
That was
you and I are the same age. That was back when you were mid-20s?
Going to Sac State.
Okay, yeah.
Going to Sac State, mid-20s, all that. And so, and what happened was over the years, I went back and I was doing guest lecturing at not only at the Entrepreneurship Academy, but at some of the universities in the area and beyond. And one of the things I noticed about entrepreneurs and business people is this one young man said to me, but it was a common thing, you know, Mr. Syfex, if I create a good product or service, I deliver it in the market, it's successful, and I return value for shareholders, my responsibility to American society is done. I shouldn't be asked to do anything. I pay my taxes, and I'm over with. And it was like somebody slapping me with a cold, dead fish. I feel so fortunate to be an American. I think that this is the greatest nation in earth, and it is the culmination of all of the mistakes that have been made throughout history. We're not perfect, but you know what? We're damn good, and we fail forward. America is always improving. And the thing is that for all those people who have bled and died and walked and marched and everything else in order to get us to the place where it is that we all can pursue our version of the American dream, if we are successful, and no matter what that level of success is, we need to replenish the bucket and to make it better for the next generation that comes after us. And so I believe that every entrepreneur, no matter how successful they are, returning money to shareholders is one thing, but put it back in. Because here's the thing. There are all sorts of initiatives and things like that to help the least powerful and the most troubled of folks in society. And guess what? If the best and brightest of American society, our entrepreneurs, our innovators, our visionaries, aren't participating in helping to solve the major problems of society, then we're leaving it to, you know, the people who don't know how to make a profit. We're leaving it to people who don't know how to bring innovation and the best and cutting-edge technology to bear. What are we doing? That's not why the founding fathers went and risked their lives to create this country. That's not why Abraham Lincoln stood to finally right the historic wrong of slavery. That's not why people marched in the Civil Rights Movement, or why our fighting men and women have gone to wars from dating back from the Civil War all the way up into the current engagements we've got overseas in the Middle East. We have a responsibility to all of those people on their sacrifice for us to give back, and for us to sit back in our homes or in our offices and say, well, we delivered value to shareholders and that's good enough. Yeah, I believe that's un-American and it's unacceptable.
I think you can see why Scott and I became fast friends. Those philosophies are ingrained in you. I share them. Now, philosophies are developed at early ages, and I know that you had some early entrepreneurial success in a paper route of sorts, the Green Sheets, which I also delivered at one
4 a.m. in the morning, folding papers.
We did a little bit of that, a little bit of Penny Saver. You know, we had multiple routes going at the same time. But
Your first real entrepreneurial success came in the distribution business, in distributing firecrackers?
Yeah, that's right. That's right. My sixth grade teacher gave me and a couple of my classmates some firecrackers, and I went back home to my neighborhood, and I was lighting firecrackers, and kids just came around like, wow, firecrackers, that's great.
Yes.
And what happened was, so I went back to my teacher, and I asked him, I said, where can I get some more of these things? Because people are asking me for these things. And I ended up buying a brick, and then one brick became more bricks, and pretty soon I had kids all over the neighborhood selling firecrackers for me. And I was like, wow, you know, I bought a brick of 80 packs of firecrackers for $8, and I was selling the packs for $1 a pack. That's pretty good business. And that's when the entrepreneurial bug stung me for life.
You had a little extra cash when your friends were having to beg mommy for money, huh?
Yeah, and my dad, who was a real estate broker and a developer from originally in Detroit before he moved out to California, I can tell you that he and my mom, who were also entrepreneurs themselves, you know, they were like, that's my boy.
Scott, you're so engaging. You have a television show on KVIE called Studio Sacramento. Can you share with us what that is? I think that it's fair to send some listeners there, because I've watched that show many times, and it's very informative.
Well, Studio Sacramento, and I have to say, which is its primary sponsor is Five Star Bank. It comes on every Friday at 7:30 and repeats on Sunday. And essentially, when we were in the depths of the recession, and Forbes magazine said that Sacramento was less attractive to live in and was a more of a basket case than Detroit, Michigan. And I was born in Detroit, Michigan, so I know how bad Detroit has been. I'm like, this is ridiculous. But what happened was is that I felt like the media in this town, and I'm blaming everybody, okay? Broad brush blaming everybody. It was almost like blood sport to try and to put out news stories about how screwed up this city was and how pathetic we were and everything else. And I felt like, my God, we need to pull up our socks and celebrate what's right about this place. We've got great people here, great initiatives going on, and yeah, we're in a funk right now because of events bigger than ourselves, but there needs to be a program of record that tells the real stories about the real personalities and the real initiatives going on that make this region great. So I went to the general manager of KVIE, David Lowe, and he and I just got together, and I had made a speech where I said it was called, it was time to turn the page. I was sick of hearing about bad news. Now, it's not that we don't take on tough issues at Studio Sacramento. In fact, the Emmy Award that we won a few years ago was on human sexual trafficking. We take on tough issues. But the thing is that I believe that this has always been a world-class city if we would just claim it for ourselves, and that the talent that we have and the resources that we have around us, we can be anything that we want to be. So Studio Sacramento is a platform to highlight those things, whether it's issues, personalities, whatever it is. And it's a labor of love for me and another way that I give back civically to the region.
We only have a couple minutes left, but you describe Sacramento as being different than other cities its size in terms of the in terms of racism and how there's a different, I guess, general culture in Sacramento than what you might see in many other cities our size or bigger.
Right.
Can you share that with a little bit?
All right. Let me just say for the record, I am an African-American man and proud of it. And I will tell you that I don't wake up every morning the first thing I say, oh, my God, I'm black. Okay. The world I see out of my eyes, not, you know, inward. And so I'm a man. I'm a human being. I'm an American, and I'm a proud member of the African-American community. Racism still exists in this country and in this world. And I can tell you that when I'm in New York, typically I have to stand back and let my wife hail a cab for me. It does happen. Okay. But what I want to tell you about Sacramento, as opposed to other places that I've lived and stayed, is that this area, we have issues here too. Not going to sugarcoat it, but this is, I think, the best area in the country for where it is that your neighbors can be of all different backgrounds, all different groups. My children's friends represent sort of the United Nations of the world. And the fact that they have friends from all different backgrounds, all different socioeconomic groups and all that, I think is something that it happens in few places in the country, but it's one of the benefits we have in Sacramento. This city was designated in this 2000 census as having being among the most diverse in the United States. And I think that that's a strength. I think it's a strength because what happens is familiarity and getting to know people that don't necessarily come from your background is what breaks down the preconceptions and shows the commonality of humanity that we are. We are part of one big American family, whether people want to acknowledge it or not. And you know how you know that? Go overseas sometime to a country where it is that you don't speak the language and don't know the culture. You run into an American, I don't care if they're from Alaska or Alabama, you are so thrilled to run into that person because immediately there's a connection.
Welcome back to the Mark Haney Show. I am Mark Haney, and today we had a little throwback time, a little throwback party, if you will. We had Tara Rye of Mikuni fame, along with Scott Syfax, who has built a number of things. He's also a TV show host, and really both, though, are examples of winning, right? Examples of persevering, examples of humble beginnings and achieving greatness through hard work, and really achieving greatness despite the fact that, you know, to stand out, you've got to put yourself out there and get yourself noticed. Because I think some of you may have heard me talk about something I call sheeple syndrome. That's right, where we're kind of like sheep, and we're kind of like look around at what everybody else is doing, and we say, oh, I guess we should conform to that way of thinking and that way of acting, moreover. And I think when we act like other people, like the rest of the population, like the average people that we might meet on a daily basis, we're going to end up with average results. And really, in entrepreneurship, it's so difficult to win. So if you go out there with the hope of being average, chances are you're going to get failure because it's too hard. You really, I think in entrepreneurship more than a lot of areas in life, you really have to have the courage to be different, the courage to try something other people have not tried. Yeah, we heard that in today's guest, but you see that in a lot of businesses today. People who operate their business in a way that is sort of, they blend in, then they don't have customers. We have to find a way to become remarkable, to get other people excited about what we're doing. How are we going to attract employees if there's nothing special about our business? How are we going to attract customers if there's really nothing special about our business? And some of you out there might be thinking, well, I don't own my own business yet. And I don't even know what that would be, and how do I make it different? And I would submit to you that being remarkable, being different is more of a philosophy, right? It's more of a way of thinking. So if you are an employee that's blending in, well, chances of getting a promotion is pretty slim. If you are if you're going out for a sports team and you're a high school athlete and you're running with the rest of the pack, putting out average effort, well, you know what? If you've got great talent, it might work for you. But for most of us, it doesn't work. We have to put out a little bit more, enough more that we get noticed, that it's remarkable, that we get known for something different. And here's a perfect example. I go into, here's two places I like to go. And again, I think we all know that I support small businesses, but you know what? I also go to Starbucks, right? It's one of my good habits. That's one of the things I do on the way into the office in the morning. Another place I go, I went over there today for lunch, and is Mod Pizza, right? It's a little franchise, and they sell salads that I like to eat to try to have a healthy lunch. Anyway, I'm going to compare the two. When I walk into Starbucks, I'm a regular at both. When I walk into Starbucks, it's, hey, Mark, how you doing? And there's this one guy, his name's Jeffrey, inside Starbucks, and he's gregarious, and and his personality is kind of extreme and over the top. It's like way out there. In a good way, in a positive way, in a way that I know his name. How do I know his name? Because he got himself noticed. I go over, let's compare him and the Starbucks treatment that I get to the Mod Pizza, where you walk through the door and it's like, welcome in, right? It's like they're going out of this habit. It's please, thanks, have a nice day, like they're going through the manual, the Mod manual. And again, nothing against Mod Pizza. It's just a treatment that you get that's not so different. Welcome in, right? You get in, you get your food. I got my salad today, and the guy was out. I ended up paying by credit card, and the guy was he didn't even ask me if I wanted a receipt. He was out doing something else. He didn't say hi, bye, thanks, have a nice day, or anything. It was like very routine, very average, very much what I expect in fast food. One, over the top, feel like a celebrity when you walk in. The other, I feel like a straight number. Which place do you think I am most excited to recommend to my friends? Which am I more proud to go into? Which am I more loyal to? Of course, it's Jeffrey and all my friends over there at Starbucks. Of course it's them. But, you know, that's just an example of it's okay to be great. It's okay to be to get yourself noticed. Because I'm going to tell you, my friends, I don't care whether you're working at a fast food job or you're the CEO of a big company, if you don't have that mentality of being different, having some courage to get yourself noticed, you know what? You are not going anywhere with that business or with your career. And some people may be listening going, well, it's just a minimum wage job. No, there's a compounding effect that happens when we are great, right? There's a compounding effect to getting yourself known. You get known as a winner. You get known as a hard trier. You get known as somebody that cares about others. And you know what? Eventually, you never know who's walking through your door. It might be it might be Mark Haney who wants to start a business with you. It might be if you're an athlete, it might be is somebody who's scouting for a team, a level up. Yeah, my friends, it's okay to be great. It's okay to be different. That's, I think, if you can rethink your approach to living and have the courage to put yourself out there, you're going to have a lot more success, a lot more upward mobility. You're going to make a lot more money. You're going to make a lot more friends. And you know what? If you're doing it in entrepreneurship and you are giving it everything you have, I want to know you, right? I want to know the most kick-butt entrepreneurs who are putting themselves out there. So reach out to me on social media at The Mark Haney because I want to know you. I want to know all the winning entrepreneurs in the Sacramento region. Never above you, never below you, always by your side. This segment includes the personal knowledge, experiences, and opinions about angel investing by seasoned angel investors. This content is for informational purposes only and should not be considered as legal, tax, investment, or financial advice. Nothing in this segment constitutes a solicitation, recommendation, or endorsement.